Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the HPE Quick Tips Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Charlie Rizzuto. It's a long overdue welcome back, as it's been a long time since our last episode, but new year, new goal, one episode per month, at the very least, for 2020, and we shall see how it goes. I'm really excited for this month's episode. As I was down at the PE Institute this summer, I was fortunate enough to be able to present a session, and then right after my session, I didn't even have to go anywhere to attend the next session that I wanted to be a part of because she was presenting in the same room that I was presenting in. She gave an amazing presentation on social justice, and about 5 minutes into the presentation, I thought to myself, I need to connect with Rachel to get her on the podcast and share some of her insights in relation to social justice issues. So without further ado, I bring to you my conversation with Rachel Hervey. Hey, Rachel, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, Charlie?
I'm good. Glad to finally have you on. We've been trying to put this together for a little while.
Yeah.
But I'm really excited to have this conversation. So to get started right off the bat, can you talk a little bit about what social justice is and what that term means?
Yeah. So I think that a lot of people have different definitions of social justice. I think something that is really helpful for me and was really helpful when I was trying to process what it all means is an image where there are three people standing on blocks and, or boxes, and equality meaning that they are all the same. So all the boxes are the same. It doesn't matter what the person actually needed. And then it goes through all the way to inclusion or socially just, where everybody is able to see and access what they need. It is something that may never be fully achievable. I think that we're always working on equality and equity and diversity and inclusion, and social justice is kind of that mountaintop that we're always trying to get to while accepting that it's a work in progress and that there's always unfinished business and always something more that can be done towards it. And I think that another part of social justice is the equality and equity and diversity and inclusion all being put together to kind of break down systems of privilege and and that type of thing. Yeah.
Cool. So when I saw you present down at the PE Institute, you did a really good job of kind of like unpacking how social justice is about more than mere race relations. And it's more than just a racial issue. Cause I feel like when people hear the term social justice, that's where their mind goes most often. So can you elaborate on that a little bit, how like this term social justice means more than just, race relations or race issues inside of, a community, school building, whatever the case may be, our country as a whole?
Yeah. So I agree with you that when somebody thinks of social justice, or even when they think of equality or anything, diversity, we automatically go to race or even culture. Right. And there's so much more, especially within a school setting, socioeconomic, LGBTQIA, religion, that play a role in social justice and in equality and diversity and inclusion. That those are things that are so important but often overlooked because we turn to the race and culture so quickly. And not that those are not important and absolutely are. It's just another group of people that that often get forgotten.
Yeah, no, I agree. We just finished up a social justice sequence, and as I was telling you before we started recording, in my class, and it's really interesting to hear the different students' perspectives and what might influence their perspective and the ideas that they bring into the room. So if there are teachers out there listening right now that haven't tackled social justice as a topic and matched it up with a skill, What would be your advice to them on getting these conversations started, bringing social justice conversations and learning experiences into their health education classrooms?
Start slow. Don't think you have to do it all at once. That's you're setting yourself up there. So I think that take what's already in your curriculum. And for example, you know, if you're teaching reproductive health, how can you change your language or how can you use different images that are going to be inclusive of more people, whether it be your students or others? When I teach reproductive organs and anatomy, I'm always working really hard to say things like XX and XY or people with vaginas or people with a penis in order to be accommodating and inclusive of all students, realizing that I have students who may have a vagina but don't identify as a female. So instead of saying females with vaginas, that might not be accurate of all my students. I actually had a student this past semester who raised their hand and said, you know, I noticed that you keep using XX and XY. Can you tell us a little bit about why, you know, why aren't you saying this? And I was like, thank you for bringing that up. You know, like I clearly didn't do a good enough job of explaining why I'm doing this. And the student didn't have any issues. They were totally like, I got it now, you know, after I explained a little bit more in depth. So I think little things like that are a great way to start. One thing that just kind of came on my radar recently, Andy Milne put a great, or there was, he had a guest blog posted that talked about nutrition. And something I haven't really thought about is how I'm using social justice within nutrition. And when I'm talking about nutrition in my class, and so that's something that, you know, I'm focusing on now for my coming classes is what can I do with that material? And that's accessing information and what I can do to, instead of saying you need to eat this healthy food, well, all students don't have access to this healthy food. So what can I do to make sure I'm inclusive of all the different backgrounds my students are coming from and what they have access to? So I would say start slow, start small. Don't feel like you have to tackle everything right away. But just little things here and there, and it'll build to much more.
Yeah. So it kind of sounds like social justice is a constant theme, right? It's always on your mind as you're presenting information to your students. And I really appreciate that. And I'm sure your students do as well. Do you ever bring it to the forefront of your instruction, though? Like, do you talk about things like, I mean, we just said that it's a lot more than race, but like Black Lives Matter and the root of their message, and things that are going on, maybe in your general area where you teach or in the country at large, and actually bring social justice issues right to the forefront of the conversation?
So if I am, I'm always tying it back to health curriculum. In my students' history classes, they're talking about Black Lives Matter and they're talking about same-sex marriage and things like that on the history side, you know. And so I'm always trying to tie it back into my curriculum and what I know best. I am not going to ever stand in front of my students and act like I know everything about all these topics. And there are plenty of topics where my students probably know more than I do, especially if it's something like Black Lives Matter. I have a lot of students that are really, really passionate about that. And I feel like I know some. I know I don't know everything. And I also know that I could probably do more with learning more about it. And so I tend to stick with what I know and then let the other subject area teachers handle what they know best. Granted, I realize that that's not something that all teachers have the luxury of, and knowing that social justice is going to be brought up in other subject areas. Fortunately, in my school, it is a central topic for all subjects. And so I can rest assured knowing that it's going to be brought up in other subject areas too.
Yeah, that's really cool. And again, I mean, I appreciate you. I respect you a lot as an educator. And I love the fact that you know what's going on in other classrooms outside your subject area. Because that's a really important, especially with a topic like this, that's really important to know. And I like the fact that you brought up and you recognize that some of your students may be more informed on some social justice topics. And when we approach social justice issues in my classroom, like I always learn so much from them. Their stories, their perspectives, and they teach me a lot about whatever comes up inside of our the conversation for that day. They always teach me a ton about some of these issues. We, in my school, we're really lucky, and I just had an idea. I'm kind of thinking out loud, but we have a social justice club in my school, and the student that heads up that club, and actually there's two other students that this is like their passion. Social justice is their passion. They speak about it. They advocate for it. They try to organize other students to go to this other, like, I don't know if I want to call it a club, but this organization on Long Island called Breaking Borders. And what Breaking Borders does is it gets groups of students from all different schools, all different socioeconomic status, all different fill in the blank, you could put anything in there, and get them together to have real conversations about a specific topic. And Breaking Borders travels. So, you know, Freeport High School may host it, Syosset High School might host it. We hosted it once last year. And the idea that I just had was maybe to follow up your conversation is to maybe get those kids to come on the next episode and talk about their perspectives of social justice as a student. But like I said, I'm thinking out loud. So let's get back to Rachel.
That sounds awesome. I think student voice, right? That's what drives everything we do. So the more we can hear from students, the better.
Yeah, no, I agree. Actually next week I'm going to reach out to them and see if they're down with it. Before I started to tackle some social justice issues in my class, jumped on, started to see what I would, if I typed it in Google, what would pop up? Like, what are the kids seeing if they're starting to look for information on this topic? And when I typed it into YouTube, the first video that popped up, and it wasn't the only one, but basically the message of the video was that social justice isn't a real thing, right? No matter what group of people you're trying to advocate for and what kind of justice you're trying to bring into the conversation or the situation, it's fake, it's made up. And that kind of got me thinking about potential pushback if you're having social justice conversations, or even the question that you referenced before that your student asked, why aren't we saying boys and girls or whatever the case may be? Have you experienced any pushback? And if you haven't, has there been anything in your school where you may have had to advocate for social justice to people who may have questioned why these conversations are occurring?
So, I mean, I think that's always, as a teacher, we're always kind of thinking about that or worried about what the backlash is going to be, right?
Right.
And certainly I have had communications from parents that, you know, they don't want their student to learn this or that. But in respects to the social justice topics, I really haven't. However, I do know that our principal has received emails, and I would say it's like one or two or three families, not a large number at all, but there's always going to be somebody who's going to push back and say it's not important, or why is the school teaching this, or it doesn't exist, and, you know, we should stop talking about this. And I think that all comes back down to education, right? And not just the education of the students, but the education of the families. And in the end, values are values, beliefs are beliefs, and I do feel strongly that it's not a school's position to teach values, but teach facts. And I always tell my students, like, I am going to teach you the facts in here. I am not going to tell you, you know, if I think this or this is better, because those are my values, and you are all welcome to your values and your opinions. But what we have to do is make sure that this is a respectful place for everyone. And so I fortunately haven't gotten a lot of that But I do know that our principal has. I think that the more a school can promote their acceptance of diversity and equality and social justice, the better. I also think the more communication. You never want to catch somebody off guard. And a lot of times families, if they know ahead of time, they feel better about it than if they find out after the fact. And so I think a lot of that comes down to the communication that families receive from the school. And also I think the relationships that the teachers have with the students. If families know that their students have these really great relationships with their teachers, the trust is there much more than if kids don't feel those connections with their teachers. So I think that it comes down to education for the students and for families. Maybe you do like parent nights or parent family university type things. I think it comes down to communication between the school and the home, and it comes down to the relationships with the teachers and students.
Yeah, everything always goes back to relationships, right? That's the strongest foundation we could build with anything we're going to do. So before, you referenced how social justice is just a constant theme throughout your teaching, right? And you may not necessarily focus on it as a topic that you match up with a skill, but have you communicated personally with parents or families about anything in relation to social justice? Have you ever felt the need to do that? Like, you know, you hear about teachers sometimes sending letters home before they, you know, teach sex ed or something like that, or before they have a conversation. Have you personally ever had those conversations or that line of communication specific to social justice with the parents or families of your students? Or has there not really been a need to do that?
Yeah, so I personally haven't had to. And the only reason that is because social justice is such a central theme for my school that those notifications come from our principal. Okay. And we have, I forget the exact name of it, but essentially it's like a diversity, equity, social justice contract that students sign at the beginning of every year saying like, I'm going to, you know, abide by these things and I'm going to make sure that I'm doing my part and respecting others. And that actually goes home to families too. So the communication for those, for that comes from the top. So I don't personally have to do it. However, if I was in a school that communication wasn't coming from the top, I would think that would be a really important thing to do, because again, the families just want to know what's going on. And they have the right to know what's going on in their child's classes. And proactive communication is always better. And is going to get you a lot further with families than having to backtrack. So I think it's definitely important. If it's not coming from the principal end of things, then definitely in a classroom base, it needs to happen.
Yeah, I agree. Nothing wrong with transparency, right?
Right.
So I know your school, well, I know because you told me, but I know your school has, what is it called? Edgy Day?
Yeah, Equity, Diversity, Justice, and Inclusion. So it's EDJI.
So can you talk a little bit about what that day looks like, the purpose of it, which I think we could make assumptions on, but also like how that day like translates or transfers into the rest of the school year?
Yeah, so Edgy Day started, 3 years ago. We actually called it Diversity Day, and we had a half day of school, and we used that whole half a day to do different activities related to diversity. And from that, these Edgy Days built, where we have a teacher who is our DEI, Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion chairperson, and she works with a group of students to plan these activities. So it's really student driven, and we'll take an hour or two about once every other month, maybe four times during the year. And we put groups of students together across grade levels so that they're interacting with students who they don't have classes with necessarily. So each group, there might be two or three kids from each grade. And then they have a teacher there. And then those groups are, and the activities are actually led by students. So the teacher is there as a participant. And then of course, to, you know, any types of management that needs to happen that the students aren't able to do. But it's really led by the students, for the students, and they do activities related. There's different topics. So far this year, we've had one related to LGBT and one related to, privilege, I guess, was the main topic of it. And then in February, we'll have one that's related to African-American and Black Lives Matter, because February is African-American History Month. And so they always have a theme, but then we do different activities and get students talking about these topics to open that line of communication and discuss. We do it in the cross grade groups so that students can get to know other students. Students can see faces in the hallway and learn a little bit more about other people. And I guess I should say, before we start Edgy Day each year, we also do some prep work, and we call them passports, but they're homeroom classes that the students are in for all 4 years of high school. And so we do a day, not like an hour or two of prep work in that group, where it's a little bit more of a braver space because they're more familiar with those students. So they kind of prep in that, and then we do the Edgy Days later. And we do them kind of in the middle of the day. You know, we'll shorten classes and build them into the schedule for 2 hours, just to make a time and a space for those conversations. And like I said, they're student created, they're student led. The teacher during Edgy Day is really a participant. They are not the facilitator. They are not leading any of it. They are a participant who sits in the chairs with the other students and learns from the student leaders who have gone through different trainings with my colleague who's in charge of DEI for our school. So that is kind of a quick synopsis of Edgy Day. But it's really just to keep that conversation going about different topics, to allow like our GSA, our Gay Straight Alliance, will help with the LGBT stuff, our Black Student Union helps with the February. We have a Muslim Student Association that helps with some of the planning. So all of our different identity groups help, and it gives them a platform to talk about things that are going on. So that's kind of the idea behind Edgy Day, is just making that time and space for those important conversations, and just showing how important they are.
That sounds awesome. It sounds a little bit like the Breaking Borders program that I referenced earlier. When these schools get together, the teachers basically, so let's say we went to, I referenced Freeport before, say we went to Freeport for Breaking Borders, we would go to the school with the students, and then the teachers from all of the schools that are there get out of the way, and then the kids run it. So I think there is a student leader from each school, or maybe a small team of student leaders from each school that collaborate in the month prior to the meeting. And they create the questions and the scenarios and all of that stuff. And then each one of them takes a large group of students consisting of smaller groups of students from different schools. And then they run everything. All we do is hand out pizza and like show them where the drinks are, and they do everything. And it's really, really cool. I love to float from group to group and just kind of hear what they're talking about.
Time and time again, I hear from students, like they want to learn from their peers. Right. And I think that the more we can put students at the forefront of topics like this, the better off we are.
Yeah, one of my favorite things about having conversations in relation to social justice and different identity groups and all these topics that we're discussing right now is hearing their stories and their perspectives. So whether it's at Breaking Borders or in my classroom or during Challenge Day, which is another program that we run at my school.
Yeah, I did Challenge Day in high school.
Yeah, I love Challenge Day. I don't like not being in my classroom. I'm never sick from school unless I'm at a conference or on a field trip or at Challenge Day. So I don't know. I just love hearing that stuff, especially in relation to these conversations. You mentioned access and privilege a few times, and I kind of want to go to that second word really quickly. So you could take this in any direction that you want, but can you explain a little bit about how you explain what privilege means to your students, or do you have any advice for teachers, again, that may be tackling these topics for the first time on how to address privilege with their students and what it actually means and how we could recognize privilege in our life or the lives of others or a lack of it?
Yeah.
I know it's a big one.
Yeah, privilege is a tough word, I guess, is a tough topic. And you have to be really careful with how you talk about it and how you examples of it and that type of thing. I think for somebody who's kind of just starting talking about social justice or thinking about it, I think to think about privilege is to think about what one person has over another. And to think about, you know, do you have students of privilege and do you have students who aren't as privileged and what does that look like? I would not ever want to in my class say like, this is what privilege looks like for a student and this is what it doesn't. I think that that's a great way to get a lot of people upset. And you never want to make students feel uncomfortable. You never want to make it so that students are saying like, oh, this person has privilege and this person doesn't. In high school, students have already figured that out, right? Students already know who's driving what cars, who's a senior and riding the school bus because they don't have a car. You know, those are things that kids are seeing. So I think that you need to be really careful about how you're talking about it and how you're drawing attention to it. But, you know, for example, I'm going to be talking about nutrition coming up, and we're going to be talking a lot about how we access healthy foods and where we can go to get healthy foods, and talking about, you know, fruits and vegetables are a lot more expensive than ramen noodles are. We're telling people to eat healthy, and we know that fruits and vegetables are healthier than ramen noodles, but not everybody can afford this. So how do we access this? How do we kind of try and level out the playing field and get people to have access to things that they might not have access to due to their lack of privilege, right? And privilege also isn't just economic. And I think that a lot of times we automatically go to money when we think of privilege. And privilege is, are you white or are you black? Like, that is privilege. privilege is, did you, you know, where did you grow up? Did you grow up in a very suburban town where you had access to a lot of stuff? Or did you grow up in the country and further away from things that, you know, healthcare, for example, you didn't have healthcare. So privilege isn't just financial, right? Privilege is right. A lot of stuff. And I think that's what makes it such a big word, because it's so much. And so I would say is to just really be careful and really think about, and maybe even, you know, talk through how you're going to talk about privilege in your class with other people. Talk through it with a history teacher, talk through it with an administrator. So you can get different ideas of what people think and how it's coming across. I think that kind of sums it up, is that it's a big word. So go slowly and carefully. And never, you know, call students out or anything like that. They're in high school or they're in school. So those things are already being called out, whether it be in person, behind people's backs, in their just, you know, something they're dealing with internally. The kids are already living with that. So let's not call it out. Let's not make students feel bad one way or another either.
Yeah, I totally agree. And that's why I asked you, Rachel, because it is such a big word. And I wanted to hear your perspective on it. Do you think the people, the students, the kids that have more recognize some of the reasons why they may have what they have, rather than just looking at the students that don't have what they have as not having it? Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I think that comes down to each student individually, right?
Right.
Are there students who understand their privilege and know where it comes from and accept that they have a privilege? 100%, right? But not all students. There are plenty of students who maybe think that what they have is what everybody has, who don't take the time to think about how lucky they are or where their resources are coming from. And I think that that's one reason why we do things like Edgy Day, is to kind of bring to light some of those things and encourage students to think about that. So like I said, I think it comes down to each student individually. And, you know, as I'm sure in your school, as my school, is every school really, as much as we as a staff try to bring people of different backgrounds together, there's still always going to be some lines of like, well, that those students have this, or these students don't have this, you know? And I think that's something we're always working on. It is certainly not something that my school has accomplished in breaking down all those walls. Right. If there is a school out there, I guess I'd love to see it, because I think it's something that's always, it's ongoing. It's not a destination, right? It's a journey to get there. So I think it comes down to each student individually and kind of what they're taught at home and what they're open to thinking about too.
Right. Yeah. This is probably going to be a difficult one to answer, but I'm going to throw it at you anyway and do your best, Rachel. So some students may recognize, some may not. Do you feel like for those students who don't recognize it yet, do you think that through things like Edgy Day, the conversations in your class, in other classes, do you think that that gives them the tools and helps them to be able to empathize with other people's situations and kind of recognize some of their privilege and be able to empathize with other people?
I hope so. I think, Gosh, I don't know. I hope so. And I think that that is why we bring in the student voice when we talk about these things and when we plan for activities like this. I also, whenever I'm teaching, I'm always trying to keep the what I was like when I was 15, 16, 17 years old in mind. And knowing that I personally was not at a developmental point when I was in high school to have thought that way. And so I realized that I have plenty of students who aren't at that point too. And so I think that even if not all students are feeling that way, I don't think, like, don't give up, right? They might not get it today, but they might get it in 6 months. And, you know, that's better than never getting it. And so I'm hopeful. I think that also kids today are incredible. And I think as educators, we know that, but I don't feel strongly that people outside the world of education know that. And, I mean, the things that some of my students do and the advocacy for things they feel strongly about, like, it blows my mind. And so I realize that I'm not going to get to everyone. We're not going to get to everybody. But even if we can get to a few students, that's better than none. And also realizing that it takes time and everybody's going to take a different amount of time to get to that point.
That's almost the perfect way to just wrap up. But I did want to give you the opportunity to give any, you know, further advice or just anything that maybe we didn't get to that you wanted to throw out there that people may need to be aware of before addressing some of these topics or just changing their language or how they approach the topics that they're already that they already have in their curriculum, like you mentioned at the beginning, or anything that you want to discuss or just throw out to the people that are listening.
I think just educate yourself, right? Like, I didn't know a lot of this several years ago, and I just started educating myself, and I watched things and I read things, and again, I don't know everything and I never will know everything, right? But just getting to know more things and reading books. Becky Fulmer on and Mark on their website, Chromebooks for Health and PE, they have a page with a ton of resources that I would encourage people to check out. And know that you don't have to teach history to build this in, right? You can teach health, you can teach PE, you can teach science, like whatever you teach, you can teach social justice and bring it in different ways to connect with your curriculum. And so just start slow and educate yourself. And little by little, you will find yourself building these things in, whether it is something you're explicitly teaching or the way you're changing a practice that you have in your classroom, right? Like, I, for example, I don't give homework. Not all students have the ability to go home and do homework. I have students who go home and babysit younger siblings. I have students who go right to a job for the next 6 hours. And when they get home, they go to bed, right? I work all day and then I get home and I want to lay on the couch. I don't want to sit and do more work. And so just little things like that, the more you can learn about your own practices and what you can do, the further it's going to go for everyone, yourself, your students, your colleagues, your community. So I think it all comes down to just educate yourself. Don't be afraid to learn from your students. Don't be afraid to ask questions. And know that it's a journey. You're always learning something. None of us know everything.
Perfect. Rachel, thank you so much for coming on. You're a rock star. I hope that people not only listen to the podcast, but reach out to you afterwards to pick your brain about some more specific things that may be trying, whether it's resources, lessons, the edgy day, maybe they want to bring it to their school or anything like that. So thanks for coming on, Rachel. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
And there we have it, my episode with Rachel Hervey regarding social justice issues in health education. I want to thank Rachel for coming on the show. If you want to get in touch with Rachel, her contact information will be on the notes for the show. Also, if any of you have any great ideas that you want to share, please just get in touch with me, RizzutoEducation@gmail.com. You can reach me on Twitter @RizzutoEd. My contact information will also be in the notes for the show. A quick preview for the next episode. It's going to be part two to this conversation in some way. So Rachel talked about Edgy Day. I talked about breaking borders. We both mentioned Challenge Day. And we both talked about the power of student voice. After we were done recording the episode, we continued our conversation down that road. And we decided to get in touch with some people in our districts and bring them on the next episode to have almost like a roundtable conversation, get some student perspective, talk about Edgy Day a little bit more, talk about breaking borders a little bit more, give you some more insight into those programs, just in case you want to bring them into your building. And also, to get some of the student perspective on the value of having these conversations about diversity and social justice. So look for that coming up in March. Before we close up today, I did want to mention one thing regarding the intro music that I use for the show. That's an original beat by a guy named Clockwork. If you Google Clockwork Beats, Clockwork Production, you'll find a bunch of different people that go by the name of Clockwork. But there was this one guy in Pennsylvania. I bought this beat from him when I was in college. When I was in college, I was really into hip-hop, as were a lot of my friends. You know, we would buy beats from people and mess around with them. And I didn't know Clockwork personally, but I did buy this beat from him that years later I ended up obviously using for the show. So I did feel, and I do feel, some connection to him, I guess you would say. So, I don't know, maybe 2, 3, 4 months ago, I don't know exactly when it was, I was perusing the internet, and I decided to see what Clockwork was up to. And I don't know if I was on YouTube or on a different website, I'm not sure. But I was reading through some comments to a beat, and a couple of people wrote, rest in peace. And to be honest with you, I don't know if it's true or not. I don't know if he did pass on, but I felt it would be appropriate, in case it was true, to play his entire beat as we close the show. So remember, everybody, it is health that is true wealth, not pieces of gold and silver. And here is In Full, Every Night by Clockwork. Thank you.
before I go to sleep. Every night before I go to sleep. Every night before I go to sleep.